prepare for a truth revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
Good morning, it is Truth Revolution, and this is where faith meets reason.
TruthRevolution.tv. Sorry, I interrupted you. Right.
Hey, well, you got to have that top of mind awareness.
Yes.
TruthRevolution.tv. We contend that you don't have to get rid of one to enjoy the other.
That's right.
Faith and reason can coexist. We can use our brains and our Bibles at the same time.
And we're supposed to use our brains. God doesn't want us to throw our brains out.
Well, he made them.
He made us with brains. He made us with the ability to reason and logic and think.
Right.
So if you're not thinking, if you're not listening to your brain and your synapses firing, you've got a problem. You're not doing religion the right way.
Right. I'm Dave, and this is Pastor Jeff, in case you guys didn't know, from Revolution Church.
Howdy. Hey, you can check us out online. TruthRevolution.tv is the regular show's website, and we are happy to be here this morning. You can check us out online. You can donate if you want, 99 cents, all the way up to $1 billion. We'll take anything.
Definitely take a billion.
We're just trying to fund the show. Costs money to run it, and this isn't going to our pockets.
Right.
This is going to the radio station's pockets.
We just want to keep this thing going week to week, you know?
Yeah, we've heard from a lot of you that you really love it, and we appreciate that. We love you telling us that. So, we are going to be talking about miracles today.
Well, yeah.
The problem of miracles. Are miracles real?
Yeah, people are going to be out there like, what?
Yeah.
Are
miracles real?
Well, it's a question that we should ask, I think, because...
I believe in miracles.
Yeah.
All right. Look, there's a
don't
lot of...
Don't ever do that again.
There's a lot of different types of miracles in the Bible. Let's just name a few, see if you can remember any. Okay. We got creation.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, you know, the second coming of Jesus.
Right.
What did Jesus do?
He turned water to wine.
Dude, that was the next one on my list.
Fed the 5,000.
All right. Moses saw the burning bush.
Yeah. Check this out.
What?
The biggest miracle of all? Jesus rose from the dead.
Okay, I thought you were going to say you were born.
Well, that's the second most important.
You said biggest miracle of all, and you didn't see him here, but he like pointed at himself, and I was like, what are you doing?
Whatever.
All right, Paul raised a guy from the dead after he preached too long.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. Yeah, because he fell out the window.
This guy fell asleep while Paul was preaching because he's preaching late at night, really kind of boring. The guy fell out the window and landed and died. And Paul's like, well, I better raise this guy from the dead.
That's funny.
That'd look bad.
Yeah, I read that when I was in Bible college, and I was like, what? Anyway, you know, when we speak of miracles, typically people only think about the miracles that Jesus performed. And there's more than just that.
Oh, yeah, there's lots.
Although Jesus did perform the most important miracle of all, you know, was the resurrection where he saved us all from our sins. But, you know, Paul performed miracles. There were even people performing miracles in Jesus' name that had nothing to do with Jesus, and they eventually got their comeuppance. But
that's true.
You know, so, I mean.
Actually, they got beat up by a demon.
They did.
Kind of a funny Bible story. But, okay, here's the whole thing, all right? For Christians, miracles are a confirmation of Jesus' power and that the Holy Spirit was working. To atheists or unbelievers, these are really fanatical fairy tales.
Right.
Yeah, I have a friend who seemed like a Christian when we were in high school, but he's not a Christian now. I asked him, I said, why'd you stop believing? And his answer was, quote, "It all just started to seem ridiculous to me."
Well, you know, I mean, if you just take it at face value and don't look any deeper into it, then that's what you may get.
I stopped believing in God because I don't want to believe in fairies anymore.
I've got friends like that, too.
Now, for them, there is only natural law. Maybe if that's one of you listening today, you believe in natural law. As one author put it, fire consumes when it burns. Lions eat whatever's available. Pregnancy only happens when male sperm unite with female ova, and the dead stay dead. As far as they're concerned, the miracles of the Bible could no more be true than Mother Goose. Now, if that's your belief, what I want to show today, possibly, is that miracles are not a contradiction of science or reality or logic. Okay. What I want to show is we can't prove every miracle. Okay.
Right.
We can't sit down here and go through the Bible and prove every miracle. We might show some interesting possibilities. Heck, we've, I think, proven the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So you'll have to listen to some past shows about that, which is the biggest miracle of all. But we're going to show that the naturalistic view isn't the most logical or correct view. So if you are a logical thinker today, listen to the show and see if your view is really logical or not. Because rejecting miracles a priori is not logical. For over 200 years, people have had this naturalistic viewpoint, and they say miracles seem just too incredible. Now, we're also going to try, if we have time today, to talk about slavery.
Uh-huh.
Someone brought up the question of slavery in the Bible, so we're going to try to answer that.
We pushed that off for a week now.
We did push that off for a week, so we're going to try to get to it today. Even we never have enough time.
We don't.
Yeah, we might even have to do that at its own show or something at some point.
All right.
Well. But we'll see. All right, so here is a definition of a miracle, because miracles, I believe, are not anti-science, they're not anti-history, they're not anti-studying, they're not anything like that. Here's a definition of a miracle from the book When Skeptics Ask. A miracle is divine intervention into, or interruption of, the regular course of the world that produces a purposeful but unusual event that would not have occurred otherwise. Now, I want you to pay attention there, because it doesn't say a miracle is the impossible.
Right.
That's not what it says. It says it is the interruption of the regular course of the world that produces purposeful but unusual event that would not have occurred otherwise.
A glitch in the matrix.
Something like that. Yeah, whenever you have deja vu, that means a miracle happened.
Right.
No. By this definition, then, natural laws are understood to be the normal, regular way the world operates. But a miracle occurs as an unusual, irregular, and specific act of God who's beyond the universe. This does not mean that miracles are violations of natural law or even opposed to them. As the famous physicist Sir George Stokes has said, it may be that the event that which we call a miracle was brought on not by a suspension of laws in ordinary operation, but by the super addition of something not ordinarily in operation. In other words, miracles don't violate the regular laws of cause and effect. They simply have a cause that transcends nature.
Right.
Okay, for instance, we all, and this is going to be a very crude analogy. Just forgive me for the crudeness of this analogy.
Oh,
but,
great.
You have a bottle of water sitting on that desk.
Yes.
And the laws of physics say that it is going to stay in that position unless something messes with it.
Right.
Okay. Now, if I were to come up from underneath and drain all that water out without you seeing that,
mm-hmm.
and then blow on it, it would fall over when normally it wouldn't have.
True.
You didn't see how that happened. You have no naturalistic way of understanding that, but it looked to you like it was violating the laws of physics.
Right.
I'm suggesting that a lot of times that's what a miracle is. That God, who is in control of natural law, the God who is in control of the universe, mm-hmm. can cause events to happen. And to us, it looks incredible. But to God, he's just adding an element there, his own power,
right.
that isn't a contradiction of the laws of nature. It's simply an element that we had not accounted
right.
for.
So what you're saying, it's a slight ignorance on our part. For the fact that we do not know exactly how things happen.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's what miracles are. They start with ignorance. And sometimes we attribute things to miracles which are not really miracles because
right.
we're ignorant already. You know,
right.
we think, oh my goodness, the earth revolves around the sun. It's a miracle.
Yeah.
Well, now we've figured out how that kind of works.
Right.
So we don't call it a miracle anymore. But there are things like that when Jesus turned water into wine. How did that happen? You know, we would call it a miracle. Well, I'm betting Jesus could sit down and explain how
exactly,
by his power
right.
that happened, and we would go, oh, well, that makes sense now.
Right.
You know?
And see, that's actually the direction I was kind of going with that, was that at one time, we believed that the earth was the center of the universe,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that was the limit of our knowledge. Well, the more knowledge we gained, we realized, well, we're not even the center of our solar system.
Yeah.
You know? And so we gained that knowledge and increased our learning.
Yeah.
And
actually, but just on a side note, I read that only 55% of people in America know that the earth revolves around the sun.
Let's not get into that. That's just sad.
I just do a block.
Yeah.
Anyway, so okay, back to this. What we're talking about is naturalism,
mm-hmm.
essentially.
Right.
People believing that there are only natural explanations for things.
Right.
They just discount the possibility of God at all. Look, the reality is, if God exists, then miracles could exist.
Right.
It's not that hard to believe that God could do things that humans can't understand.
Right. Well, God made everything. He's got a back door into everything. He knows how everything works.
Yeah, that's right. So
yeah.
I like that idea of a back door. You
mm-hmm.
know, if you design the U.S. government's voter website,
mm-hmm.
and we're all voting online nowadays,
mm-hmm.
whoever designed that, you better watch carefully, because they could make a back door in there and modify things without anyone ever knowing.
That's true.
Because whoever creates it has these special ends that no one else can know about.
Right.
That's what God's done with the universe. That's a good analogy, Dave. I like that.
Well, thank you.
All right,
that happens every once in a while.
Every now and then. That's true. He's smarter than he lets on. All right. Now, these metaphysical naturalists believe that everything reduces to natural material. Okay. There's no miracles. There's no supernatural causes in the world. Sometimes they say miracles are impossible or even irrational. The problem is, it's impossible to ever come to the conclusion that God exists for these metaphysical naturalists, mm-hmm. no matter what the proof. If you start by saying there are no miracles, God does not exist, miracles are impossible, God could show up in front of you himself,
right. mm-hmm.
and you'd say, I must have smoked something.
Right. Yeah, if you totally close your mind off to the possibility that God exists or that miracles do happen, you're never going to believe it.
That's right. And that's called metaphysical naturalism. They just say it's impossible. Okay. There's another one called methodological naturalism. We've talked about this before. It says this type of naturalism allows that God and miracles might exist, but we have to deny their existence in studying. They argue that if we don't deny their existence, we might run into a God of the gaps theory. Look, which we don't want.
No.
God of the gaps is bad.
Yeah, very bad.
Okay, if you don't know what that is, that's where whenever you don't understand something,
God
must have done it.
Right.
You know, like, okay, well, this dam holds back a lot of water. Really? Wow, it's just concrete. It can't do that. It must be God.
Right.
Well, no, actually, we know exactly. God! No, actually, if you put this much concrete, it was God!
Right.
You
know? And there's people out there, unfortunately, that do attribute a lot of things that they don't understand to supernatural forces.
Sure,
you know. So,
and we don't want to underestimate God's power. God's super powerful, but we don't want to just insert God's name into everything, no matter what it is.
I think it waters God down.
Yeah, you know, sure,
and,
absolutely.
You know, in the belief. So.
Yeah. Okay. They're saying that we have to deny the miracle's existence when we study things. Now, this is also a problem because denying God's existence a priori would be naturalism of the gaps.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Right.
We know what God of the gaps is, but if you say miracles really are impossible or that we should deny their existence when we study things, you've just committed the opposite sin,
right.
I mean, you're...
Naturalism of the gaps.
Right. You're saying, well, no matter what I see, I'm not going to allow that God maybe had something to
right.
do with that. Now, granted, we should seek to find the truth about every situation. I think most of the time we can find scientific, logical, reasonable explanations. And,
mm-hmm.
and even if we say we think it was God, that should never, ever, ever stop us from studying something.
Right.
It should draw us further into studying because, wow, did God do this? Let's figure this out. Why?
Right.
How did it work when God intervened? And
well, let's be honest. God gave us the brains. He gave us the ability to learn. He gave us the tools that we need to study stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we should constantly, even if we think something is from God, we should definitely study it.
Yes. If we're seeking out truth, can we throw out an entire category of answers? No. If you are seeking truth, you can't just throw out any scientific answers.
Right.
If you're seeking truth, you can't throw out any religious answers because you don't like religion or because you don't like that God might exist. Miracles might occur if God exists.
Right.
Therefore, by saying that miracles don't exist or at least we shouldn't allow miracles in our studies, you have completely thrown out one entire category of possible truthful answers,
mm-hmm.
which is not what you do if you're a logical human being. You allow for everything. What if a colorblind person was a teacher? Would they deny the existence of an orange because it doesn't fit into the worldview?
Depends on the teacher, I guess.
No. If someone said, I'm sorry, I'm blind, I don't believe orange exists.
Right. Logically, that shouldn't happen.
Right. And so you can't just say, just because you can't see it, just because you don't understand it, it doesn't exist, we have to deny its existence when we study.
Right.
That doesn't make sense. We're gonna ask a couple more questions here. I want to ask the question, can God make a mountain so big you cannot lift it?
You know, I've had people ask me that question, and I get stumped every time.
All right, well, we're going to answer that on the other side of this break. We're going to do the slavery thing.
Okay.
We're not going to do slavery. We're going to talk about
the
question.
We're going to talk about it. Matter of fact, we'll talk about that right coming up right after the break.
Okay. All right, that sounds good. We'll do that right after the break. Go to truthrevolution.tv. You're also invited to Revolution Church today, 10:15 a.m. Please be there.
It's coming up pretty quick.
Just wear whatever you're wearing right now.
Right.
I don't care. Just unless you're still in your underwear because you're just laying in bed. But all right,
yeah,
check
that's
it out.
Dangerous.
TruthRevolution.tv. Come over to Revolution Church this morning at 10:15 a.m. We would love to have you there.
We'll be right
God
back.
God bless.
Revolution.
And we're back. Truth Revolution. I'm Dave. With me is Jeff.
Morning. Top of the morning.
Morning. We promised coming out of this break we were going to talk about this question of slavery.
We are. Let me, and I know you said that, but let me, you know, while the music winds down, let me answer one question about can God make a mountain so big he cannot lift it? Because a lot of naturalistic people, we've been talking about miracles. Are miracles possible? Are miracles scientific? Are miracles credible?
Uh-huh.
A lot of people who are naturalistic will come up with this question to try to just to throw you down, just to say, oh, look, God doesn't even make sense, okay? God's all powerful. Could God make a mountain so big he can't lift it? We're trying to show that it's a logical contradiction that God exists.
Right.
I just want to answer that really quickly. It doesn't take long at all. Or we can ask the question, can God make a mountain so big he cannot lift it? Or we could ask what Homer Simpson asked, can God microwave a burrito so hot that he himself cannot eat it? if this is true or false, what does it mean? I mean, if it's true that God can make a mountain so big he can't lift it, then God's not all-powerful.
Right.
But if God can't make a mountain so big that he cannot lift it, then he's not all-powerful.
Right.
Oh, man. Oh, no. God must not exist.
Right.
No, look. Okay, the answer is, no, he cannot make a mountain so big that he cannot lift it. Because this is a category mistake question. God is not made of flesh and muscle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about whether or not God can lift or not lift. This is a category mistake. It's like saying, hey, what if blue smelled so bad it became red?
That's silly.
Okay, I mean, yeah, we know that that question is ridiculous because we have senses like sight and smell.
Right.
So we know saying, what if blue smelled so bad it became red is a ridiculous question. But think about this. God is not flesh like us. He is not lifting things, not setting things down. Weight has no bearing on God at all. So saying, can God make a mountain so big he can't lift it? It's a category mistake. There's no such thing as lifting to God. I mean, it's a category mistake. Okay, now we are ready to do the Bible contradiction for today. We're going to be talking about slavery. We promised some people that we would do this. I actually got a question last week,
mm-hmm.
and this guy had asked about slavery. He said, look, he said something about having faith. But
here's what he said.
Okay.
How do you explain the fact that in the New and Old Testament, God got it wrong on slavery? And he says, I'm respectfully asking, not trying to start a fight, but I've never heard a reasonable answer before, and I'm interested in what you think. That seems to me to be one of the biggest contradictions you can find.
And that's the question for our Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
So, we got the music. Boom. All right, so that is a good question. I do want to point out this isn't a literal Bible contradiction. It's not an internal contradiction. It just seems to be contradicting what we know.
Right.
So, but first, let me say this. This is a difficult question.
Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, to be sure.
Despite what the rock music playing behind me implies, I do not have all the answers to everything. There are some things that are confusing, and I have a few potential answers for the slavery thing, but this is one of those things that I think is difficult, is hard to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, I don't think we're going to walk away from this going, oh yeah, well that makes 100% sense, like we usually do with our Bible contradictions,
right. Okay?
But here's what we do with this. This isn't a literal contradiction that shows that the Bible goes against itself. Right. Here's what we do though. First, we say, let us ask, is God real? Is the Bible true? And if God is real, you know, the first question is God real or not? So if he's not real, then this question doesn't matter at all. If he is real, then we say, okay, so then how does stuff like this work?
Right.
So when we answer this question, we can't say, well, the slavery thing was really hard to understand, so I'm not going to believe in God, because that doesn't make logical sense. Either God doesn't exist and this question doesn't matter, or God exists and this question, we're trying to understand how God's word could allow things like slavery.
Right.
You know, nobody says, should I eat a salad? And then first thing they do is examine all the cases where someone died of salad poisoning and then make a judgment based on that whether or not salads are healthy.
Right.
Right. You first make a decision on the preponderance of evidence. Is salad a good, healthy choice? Then after that, you might find an instance here or there where someone died of salad, and you say, wow, what was that about? Why was that different than usual?
Okay, there you go.
And so that's what we're saying today.
You want to use your brain.
You're right. We want to use our brains. The preponderance of evidence shows that God exists and that God is a loving God, gentle God, kind God. And so this is one of those things where we say, okay, this one is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
It's illogical to disregard the Bible God's existence because there's something that's hard to understand. This isn't a true contradiction or a proof that God doesn't exist. What it is, it's a big question. If the Bible is God's word, how can it seem to promote slavery? Now, this is actually such a big topic, we should do a whole show on it someday.
Okay.
I know we want to limit to like 2 or 3 minutes here. We only got 7.5 minutes left in the show anyway. So, when this question was asked, he quoted later Exodus 21, where my friend Tim says, when a man strikes his male or female servant with a rod so hard that the slave dies under his hand, he should be punished. However, if the slave survives for a day or two, he's not to be punished since slavery is his property. He says, well, how come if the slave dies after surviving a day or two, he's not punished? Well, that's a misinterpretation of that verse. Exodus 20 says if the slave dies, the guy should be punished.
Mm-hmm.
Period. He would actually have to die too, because it's considered murder.
Right.
If the slave lives, there's no punishment. Okay, so he's not saying if he survives for a day or two and then dies. It's saying if after a day or two he gets better, like in other words, you're supposed to watch him. Okay, if this guy hurts his slave, you need to watch and make sure the slave doesn't die. If the slave does die, you punish him. If after a couple of days the guy's getting better, then whew, he didn't die, okay, you don't punish this guy by death. No, this is the biggest deal. This is not permission to own a slave. It's setting limits for what humans are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other verses where it talks about, you know, if you're an Israelite, you can own a slave from another country. But really, almost all the Bible verses are misused. They're almost all about what to do when slavery exists, because unfortunately it does exist. And these are limits to what people can do to their slaves,
right.
Not permission.
It's basically guidance for the condition that is now. You know, back then, they had slavery. Well, here is guidance for what you should do in this situation.
Right. It's a standard and a limit. Like the whole eye for an eye.
Bible contradiction.
Well, that was easy.
The computer thought we finished it, but no, we just had an itchy trigger finger there. That's okay. So we're still not done, but we're getting a little bored, so we're going to
just
have
needed
music
some rock
there.
Music up underneath the voices there.
All right, for a quick answer, look, none of the Bible verses actually declare that slavery is a good thing. Most of the time, they're about how to deal with something that unfortunately exists as a reality.
Uh-huh.
Ephesians 6:5 doesn't say, "Hey, everybody, get slaves for yourselves." It simply says, hey, when you do have a slave, if you do find yourself in slavery, you need to be obedient, you need to be kind. Even the verses that imply it, you know, say things like, hey, Israelites can buy a slave if the slaves are foreigners. There's one huge thing here. God is possibly trying to protect his remnant. God, when he was dealing with the nation of Israel, he never wanted Israel to intermarry or intermingle with foreigners.
Right.
Because he wanted them to worship him alone, and all the other foreign countries around Israel worshiped false gods. And so if they saw themselves on equal terms, Israel constantly would start worshiping false gods.
Right.
So that's one possibility. But in contrast, even in the Old Testament, it says, if a slave has taken refuge with you, do not hand him over to his master.
Right.
So it's interesting. God, at the same time, is saying, look, slaves might exist in this situation. Israel even can take a slave here and there. But if a slave runs away and takes refuge with you, do not hand him back to his master. In other words, God was giving permission to these slaves to run away.
Right.
He was saying if they run away, you can own them, but if they run away from you, it's a good thing and they shouldn't be turned back to you. But plus, the Bible specifically declares that all people are equal in Colossians 3:11. It says there's no difference between slave or free. In Genesis 1, all men are created in the image of God. And although no Old Testament verse, which this guy asked about, am I going to quote right now, it specifically says in Revelation 18:13, slavery is bad. Whole book of Philemon is about slavery being bad. Revelation 17 and 18, those chapters, talk about slavery being bad. Listen to this. Exodus 21 says, he who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or he's found in his possession, shall surely be put to death. So you cannot kidnap people to make them become slaves.
Right.
1 Timothy 1 says the law was made for adulterers, perverts, and slave traders. I mean, slave traders are listed with some of the worst sins.
Right.
And the whole point of the Bible isn't our human condition, but our spiritual condition. The Old Testament was trying to show that mankind was insufficient. And here's where I think we get to the biggest thing, because the New Testament, by and large, is all about slavery's evil. In the Old Testament, it's slavery's evil, but it's allowed every now and then. Well, the Old Testament was about mankind is insufficient. mankind and the systems that we have Definitely. Do not work. That was the point of the Old Testament. All the laws that we have, even laws that God gave the people, were simply to show us that the law does not help us. That Right. was the point. It's called the shadow. Theologians call the Old Testament the shadow, the New Testament's the reality. Jesus is the fulfillment of that shadowy, dark reality in the Old Testament. John Piper wrote a good article on slavery. You should check it out. It's called Why Did God Permit Slavery? He says there are Old Testament laws and principles that don't have validity today, and there's a redemptive historical flow in the Bible that accounts for why some things were both commanded and permitted earlier that aren't now. In other words, things were bad back then, and God knew it, and God intended it, so that things could be redeemed, and God could be shown to be graceful and merciful because we would understand from where we'd come from as Right. humanity. Now, that was a super quick explanation. We should go a lot deeper, but that's the answer for our Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
We just got a bunch of rock music today. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. Okay. I just wish we really do need to spend the whole show on that because you know, we spent like 5 minutes. It was not long enough. Okay, so anyway, back to miracles. Are they possible? Are they credible? Are they... What's the deal here? Okay, I want to point out a logical argument here that people use, all right, that possibly suggests that miracles don't exist Right. or shouldn't exist, okay? This, by the way, was written by Benedict Spinoza. He was a Dutch philosopher who started the Enlightenment, and he started modern biblical criticism, actually.
Wow.
So this guy was a biblical critic, and he developed this argument against miracles. He says, one, miracles are violations of natural laws. Two, natural laws are immutable. Three, it is impossible for immutable laws to be violated. Four, therefore miracles are not possible. All right, now, I agree with him on number three. It is impossible for immutable laws to be violated.
Right.
If something's immutable, you can't violate it. That's the whole point of an immutable law.
Right.
Okay? But number two, I disagree. He says natural laws are immutable. Why? Who says that? Why do we think that natural laws are immutable? They are simply the best description of what we understand right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't understand everything about nature. No scientist would even say that we understand everything about nature.
Right. There may be a time down the road where we find out, hey, that could actually happen.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's not immutable. And number one, he says miracles are violations of natural laws. That's not necessarily true, as we talked about earlier.
Right.
Right? God uses his power to influence things, and it's not necessarily a violation. It's just there's an element there that we had not accounted for mm-hmm. in what we expect to see in nature. And so his argument there is not true because premises one and two are false. You know, the definition he uses also carries an anti-supernatural bias. It's called begging the question. Hey, check us out, truthrevolution.tv. Wish we had more time, but you'll have to check us out online and come over to Revolution Church this morning at 10:15 a.m.
See you next week.